CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
I want to welcome you into another episode of the CoinWorld Podcast. We've got a lot of great things happening for you here today. I'm Larry Jewett.
And I'm Jeff Stark.
And we have had an opportunity. It's been a pretty busy week, no doubt about that. We've got an interview coming up a little bit later on with Charles Jonath from Vegas Coin Dealer and the Coin It Podcast. But it was just about a week ago, Jeff, that we were sitting here and got the news. And I know that as the senior editor for CoinWorld, especially in the world coin side of things, this was pretty profound news.
Yeah, you know, like everybody in the world, we're saddened to and surprised to learn of the death of Queen Elizabeth II. Certainly, from a numismatic standpoint, that has ramifications that we will experience and see unfold over the coming weeks and months. You know, there's lots of discussion going on right now about how soon coinage designs will change. You know, it's very customary and traditional that coinage design unfolds over time. You know, you look back at how things were done the last time this happened. Well, this was 70 years ago, right? In 1952, and when the queen took the throne after her father died. Well, back then, tooling and die production and the design process and all that really did take a long time, and that's why there was this custom that the current year coins would continue to be struck with the now late monarch while work began or came underway to issue the new designs the following year. And obviously that played out a little different if, you know, if the death happened late in the year versus earlier in the year. But, you know, it's the way coins can be made today through digital sculpting and all that, you don't necessarily need such a long lead time like you did then. I mean, it's not like dies are being made in the Royal Mint and put on a ship to Australia, for instance, and that takes a month to get there or whatever. It's, you know, you can send it FedEx or gosh, I'm sure they probably do something more like Brinks, but you know, it could be there in a couple days. You could have somebody hop on a plane and take it there, for goodness sakes, probably just as cheap as doing any of those methods. And so we're not sure, you know, observers here, myself included, we're not sure how long this will unfold. The Royal Mint has, like many places, offered a condolence message, but they're keeping their lips sealed as far as what process was underway beforehand. You know, we all knew that the queen was getting up there in age. I was really rooting for her to get to 100. Of course, that didn't happen. I thought maybe she could challenge Queen Mum, who I think 101 when the Queen Mum died. So, and of course, Queen Mum wasn't a serving royal, as you know, she wasn't a monarch because she was married to the king who had served. But still, that would have been cool. But in any event, you know, a lot of these places, the mints and all that are just keeping things quiet. The Royal Australian Mint did disclose a very lengthy, frequently asked questions list at their website, and the Reserve Bank of Australia as well explained the process. Australia intends to keep the Queen on their $5 note. I'm sorry, the Royal on their $5 note. The Queen will remain on the note for now. It will eventually transition to Charles III, I believe. And, you know, there's all this talk about, will this money become invalid, this and that? Yes and no, because, you know, it's been so long since we've seen a change in a royal, but we know that when the UK switched to decimalization in the 1960s, you know, the Queen had been on the throne for 15 plus years at that point, right? Well, there was still coins in circulation of her father and other predecessors, other royal predecessors. So I don't expect the billions and billions and billions of coins that have been issued to all be withdrawn. They will be withdrawn over time. They will be pulled out of circulation as need warrants. But there is not going to be this massive undertaking like there was when the UK went to decimalization and literally all the coins, you know, had to be pulled from circulation, if you will, over the course of just a couple weeks. And that's why they built the Royal Mint in Wales. I mean, there were some political considerations, but they needed a new mint location to accommodate decimalization. And because the Tower Hill location just wasn't large enough, well, they built a new mint, and the driving factor of that was decimalization. You're not going to see all of a sudden the Royal Mint need to strike, you know, billions of coins over the course of the rest of this year to accommodate a shift. That's just not going to happen. It will be it will be sad, of course, to see the Queen move off of coins a little bit, but my gosh, there's no shortage of coins out there with are on them. And of course, we'll be following that. I have a story in the coming issue about that. We'll probably post that online here. Look for that soon. And we'll be, like I said, we'll be following it and updating folks as it's appropriate. But for now, we're, the Royal Mint, especially, still in a period of mourning, the UK in a period of mourning. As I get ready to go over there, I'll be there for the London CoinEx show, September 23rd and 24th. And yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see the mood there. It was such a jubilant time at the Jubilee, no pun intended. It was so joyous back in May and June when I was there. I don't expect it to be that way this coming week.
Yeah, well, we certainly our condolences to those who were affected by this. But the idea that when this happened, it was very newsworthy, and there was a lot of misinformation going out there. But one of the things that struck me was the idea that for many, many, many citizens, this was the only monarch that they knew because of how lengthy her reign was, with over 70 years. And the transition going from a female figurehead to a male figurehead, and I went back into history because I like the history side of things, and we'd have to go back to 1901 before a queen was replaced by a king. And I think it's pretty safe to say that no one alive has experienced the change that we're going through now from Queen Elizabeth II to Charles III. So that's kind of, an added twist of history right there. Well, we're going to move on right now and take a look at numismatic history, because a lot of great things have happened here. And this, of course, this latest event from September 8th does etch itself into numismatic history. But Jeff, I know you've gone back into the archives. What'd you find in numismatic history to share with us?
Well, we don't have to go 121 years back to explore this fun little nugget of trivia, no pun intended. We only have to go 18 years to 2004, when the U.S. Mint unveiled the 2005 Jefferson 5-cent coin with the Lewis and Clark reverse designs. This is something that I think, pretty much almost every listener was around for. Certainly the majority of listeners were around for this. The 5-cent coin since 1938 really hadn't changed for the U.S. until this. You could make an argument for the large mint mark on the wartime nickels, but design-wise, it'd been really static. It's just Jefferson. It's just Monticello on the reverse. There's nothing new to it. Well, the Westward Journey series was a nice little deviation from that, with Lewis and Clark related designs, and the Jefferson, the handshake metal design, and then, you know, from that we got a different portrait of Jefferson and so forth. The 2005 designs were unveiled on September 16th, 2004. So to me, that was fun. You know, it's just because it's something I remember, and I was at CoinWorld then. And I don't remember if it was that year or I think it was the next year in Kansas City, I got to interview a designer of one of those coins. And the Ocean in View, oh, the joy, Joe Fitzgerald is his name. And that was fun because, you know, it double meaning for me because I remember writing about it. I remember when the coins came out. And so, yeah, that's this week in numismatic history.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, as far as remembering that, I think I've got clothing that was around when that came out. So still probably own that. I think my tax returns are still in there from that year, 2004. But let's advance it just a little bit ahead of time here. Move up a couple of years. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with Charles Jonath, who is from Vegas Coin Dealer and also the host of the Coin It podcast. His interview is coming up here in just a matter of a few moments, but 2006 is where we spun the wheel and turned the dial to. And CoinWorld, I think that's what, September 18th, 2006?
Yeah, and we chose that because that was the year of the Nevada State Quarters release. And, you know, since you did get to speak to Mr. Vegas Coin Dealer, Vegas is in Nevada, I thought that was most appropriate. The thing that jumped out to me in that issue was actually nothing on the front page. It was a story I wrote, and I vaguely remember not writing it, but I mean, I wrote the story. I vaguely remember the concept and exploring the topic. This was the international page, the headline, Canadian Coin Custom Catching On. Subhead is, our second deckhead is, Some Hope Dollar Coins Under Ice or Floor Bring Good Luck. And it was fun to look at this story again in light of what all has happened since its publication. But in 2002, so 20 years ago, the Canadian hockey teams, Olympic hockey teams, men's and women's, won gold medals in Salt Lake City after ice maker and Edmonton native Trent Evans placed a standard 1987 Loon Dollar beneath the ice surface. He actually first placed a 10-cent coin of an unspecified date, Canadian coin though, before flooding the surface. After the first layer of ice had been laid, he placed the Lucky Loon or Lucky Loony directly above it. And both teams won gold at that venue, and Evans presented the buried Loon Dollar once it was retrieved from the ice to Wayne Gretzky, who was then executive director of Team Canada. Gretzky handed the coin over to the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. So it's interesting how coins can serve as more than money, as talismanic objects, if you will, items of good luck. And the Lucky Loony from that story in 2002, the Royal Canadian Mint has issued several specially designed Loon Dollar coins for subsequent Olympic Games. Now, they haven't done it every time, I don't think, but I want to say they did in 06, 08. Of course, they hosted the Games in 2010 in Vancouver, and they did one there. They did regular circulation quality versions. They did a sterling silver version as well, at least one of those years. Anyway, you can collect a whole arena, pun intended, of of Lucky Loon themed coins. And if you expand your good luck collection, you can find, outside of Canada and outside of these buried coins, you can find four leaf clover coins and golden horseshoe coins that are, you know, horseshoes supposedly a symbol of luck. And it's just fun. I wish folks could read this story. It was, I mean, I really worked on this story to find a lot of sources and track down a lot of information exploring how this custom came to be. And, you know, for instance, Canadians on the women's basketball team at the University of Utah placed a Loon Dollar below the surface of the Pepsi Center during their Mountain West Conference tournament in Denver. You know, the team won the title, earning an automatic berth in the NCAA tournament where they made it to the Elite Eight before losing to Boston University. There's numerous examples of this kind of stuff, especially oriented around Canadian coinage usage. And it really originates to that 2002 event. And there was some stuff coming out from the Royal Canadian Mint in 2008 relating to it. That's why I wrote this story back then. So that was the fun blast from the past for me to see something that I actually wrote from 14 years ago and reconnect with the story of the Lucky Loon coins.
Well, and it's interesting that you choose something related to luck when we're going to be talking later to Vegas coin dealer Charles Jonath. But we did have one letter that I want to get in here kind of quickly. So the letter was entitled, "Who's Serious?" There have been many articles, columns, and even advertisements published in Coin World in which the term serious collector has been used. In most cases, my impression is that the term is used to imply that if one is not a serious collector, that person shouldn't even be reading Coin World at all. Consequently, I have also deduced that a serious collector must spend hundreds or even thousands of dollars on numismatic publications to be read and pondered, never buys raw coins, preferably buys coins only at auction, and rarely completes a collection for various reasons. That's from John Hale, address withheld. And it's like, yeah, what is a serious collector? I mean, it's different strokes for different folks. I mean, just the idea that just because you're not spending a lot of money on it, does that mean you're not serious about it? Just because you're not spending a lot of time on it, does that mean you're not serious about it? It's okay to have a hobby. It's okay to have a pastime, that type of thing. So it's interesting to use the term, and I know I'm guilty of it, using the term serious collector and wondering what exactly that means to be for a person to be a serious collector. Before we get to our interview right now, though, we want to wrap up some business as far as the trivia questions. We got just a couple of minutes left. So let's recap what the past trivia was.
So seriously, last time I asked you and the listeners, we were talking about quarters, so I wanted to know what was the first year of a U.S. quarter. And then to raise the stakes, I said, how many were struck and what does that translate to as a face value? So, you know, you can get multiple points on this or, you know, one point for the year and so forth. Do you have any inkling what I was referring?
If I'm right, it's going to be the 1796. There's going to be 6,146 of them, and I'm going to say that's according to Red Book, the Mega Red, actually. So divide that by 4, it's 1539, something like that.
You're close. I'm going to give you full credit because you had the year right. That's the Drake Bus type, 6146 coins. That's $1,536.50.
Ah.
And so, yeah, you had the right number. You just didn't do the math right. So I'm going to give you full credit.
Well, see that, and the reason for that is because you didn't do the math right earlier on the 17 versus 18 or whatever it was.
Well, I did the math right. I was looking at 2004 versus 2005. The designs were 2005. I had that in my head, but they were unveiled in 2004. So anyway, it's all good. You aced this one. Speaking of aces, you know, you talk to Vegas coin dealer, and I immediately thought of a story out of Las Vegas that has a numismatic connection. There is a famous pedigree on coins that comes from Las Vegas. And you can find these coins in slabs that relate to something, a place, a person, who knows, something in Las Vegas. And I'm just going to leave it very vague, which leaves it wide open. And there's a couple different answers that I'll accept, but there's certainly one that I'm thinking of. And I've already referenced a word related to this in something I said earlier in this episode, but I'll leave it at that. You can think about that. Perhaps a Vegas coin dealer talks about it. In the meantime, here is that interview.
The Coin World Podcast is pleased indeed to have Charles Jonathanis with us here today, because Charles is a man who wears many hats, and to get the opportunity to speak to him after his travels here recently and maintaining his business, first of all, Charles is with Vegas Coin Dealer. He also is the man behind the Coin It podcast, and I highly recommend you give a listen to that, because I really enjoy the interviews if you've done it. Charles, I mean, I know what it's like. I'm changing you from the interviewer to the interviewee. Welcome to the Coin World podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on. I'm also a fan of your guys' podcast. I listen to it regularly, and then I have it, you know, I download all the episodes or whatever on my Spotify.
Yeah, and when I saw that, when we first made the connection and you're a subscriber, and it's like, I got to get to know this guy. I mean, because then I started listening to the Coin It podcast as well, and I neglected that I haven't signed up yet, but I'm going to obviously get involved with that. But first of all, let's start getting to know you a little bit better. Tell us a little bit about how you became involved in numismatics.
Wow. Okay. Well, it kind of was natural for me. I grew up in the business. I'm third generation doing it. So I'm literally the kid that grew up in a coin shop. My stepfather did that, and his father did coins. So we had a store, and my school was like pretty close to the coin shop. So my stepfather would pick me up from school. Then after school, I'd go straight to the coin shop and be there till probably about like 5 o'clock, when we would go home at 5 or 6 o'clock. So I was just always around coins. I actively played with coins. I tried to make little makeshift collections when I could. So it was just always there, you know. And just over the years, when I got older and I got in a position to where I wanted to say I wanted to actually become an entrepreneur and get into business, I thought, well, what do I love to do? And that's really coins. So I was very fortunate to be able to start in the store and doing, you know, bullion transactions, and then dealing with people over the counter. And then it just sort of evolved over time. There was this weird natural progression where I started getting more and more clients for the things that I liked, which was, you know, high-end US collectible coins. And I just started doing that little by little, and then based on demand from the clients and growing a client base, I wound up doing exclusively more of the high-end US numismatics. So we decided to split the two businesses. I started another company to where I would just handle the high-end stuff, and then it would work that way. I mean, and I wanted to go to Las Vegas, so I was like, okay, what's the most generic name I can think of? Vegas Coin Dealer, right? It's just it was the simplest thing. I just decided, okay, because all this was supposed to be just like a company, basically an LLC that it made it easy for us to do the books. So, okay, all the high-end stuff is through this, and then the general coin shop stuff and the bullion goes through the other company. But it just grew and grew and grew, and now it's branched off into its own thing, you know, its own brand and company, which is crazy to me. I never would have expected this like 3 years ago.
Well, especially because of around that time. But I think it's really neat that you actually capitalize what the search engines, if somebody types in Vegas Coin Dealer, you got the number one spot right there. So, I mean, it's just the way to go right there. But since you had the early beginnings, the early beginnings were involved into a brick and mortar store. But let's just go ahead and clarify right now that Vegas Coin Dealer is not a brick and mortar.
Correct. Yes, we are not. We're not actually a coin shop. We deal with clients. We do like, you know, certified US numismatics primarily, but we will do some world stuff on occasion, but more the higher end, and that all that stuff is really curated. I mean, we curate the coins and stuff like that, that we sort of deal in. And now, you know, we're kind of making a little, we're sort of, I like to call it putting our foot in the pond of auctions, and we're going to see how that goes. Also too, by heavy recommendation of just our client base, sort of appeasing our client base. You know, there was several of our clients wanting to talk about auctions and possibly participate in auctions. which I actually encouraged them to, if they wanted to see how their coins would do in an auction, to put them in, you know, an established auction house. And they never got around to doing it. I think we put one coin out there from us into an auction of a major auction house, and it did okay. And, you know, over time we just decided, okay, well, let's try this and do one sale and see sort of how it goes. And I thought about that a lot, you know, because auctions is not something I really wanted to do, but I thought if I'm going to do it, I'm going to be very, very straightforward, very clean operating when I do any type of auction. So no basic hidden fees, nothing crazy that's going on behind the scenes with, you know, clients trying to protect coins, or no shenanigans basically, and do it very small to where there's, you know, maximum of 50 lots, let's say. And it's very easy for someone that's participating in the auction to follow all the items. It goes pretty, it's going to go really fast, the sale, so you're not having to sit there through hundreds of lots, and just do a few choice pieces and see how it goes. And I wanted to create a very easy process for both the client, the consigner essentially, and then the bidder.
Well, even with this idea that you're talking, as far as quantity goes, there's still a lot of quality in what I see in this upcoming auction. Tell us a little bit about what we could expect to see and when it's going to take place.
Yeah, well, that's the crazy thing. So it's the nature of our clients, right? Our clients have really great coins, which is, it's difficult because, you know, here we are, this new auction house, and it's like, okay, well, obviously our clients are going to have great coins, but are we going to get them the proper coverage in order to be able to give their coins the best shot on the auction block? So that's, you know, that's something that, you know, I wasn't really all that comfortable with. But since we started this whole process and put the lots out there and reaching out to people and just using our network, we've pretty much been able to get everything bid, fortunately, and it seems like it's going to go well. So I'm really excited to see what this experiment is going to hold. The auction itself is going to be run in conjunction with Long Beach Show, which will be this end of September. And the actual date of the auction is going to be September 30th at 5 p.m. Eastern. There'll be a short live sale, but the live sale won't be actually physically in Long Beach. It's going to be in the office in Las Vegas. So it'll go relatively quickly because there's only 16 lots. So,
and then if anybody has any desire to look at it, your website is a great place for people to go and find out more information about the auction and what you do here. And that's at vegascoindealer.com. So I want to make sure that we make note of that vegascoindealer.com can answer. You've got beautiful pictures on there. I mean, for the auction, anybody who's interested in the auction, just clicking on the auction tab and it's all right there for you, and beautiful, bold pictures. So you know exactly what you're getting here. I mean, it's obvious with you being the chief numismatist, you want to make sure to put your best foot forward here.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I wanted to get the pictures right to where they were realistic, but they also captured the eye appeal of the coin when you hold it in the hand. Like when you hold the coin in your hand, you're able to see the toning and everything like that. So we wanted to capture the toning as well on some of these coins that exist. So it took time to get the setup right. I mean, with toning, we had to build a system using what's called axial lighting, where you light the coin from the side and the coins are photographed through a glass, actually, that sits at a 90 degree angle. So for toned coins, that's a good way to capture the toning. I mean, as you know, coin photography is not so simple. It's actually a complicated process, especially when you're shooting coins through the plastic holders. Because not only the coins themselves, you have reflective surfaces, but also the plastic itself adds an additional, you know, reflection there. So, yeah, it's complicated, but I'm glad we got what I think is sufficient to show like the coin properly. And then also most of these coins too have true views. You could go on to PCGS website and see their true view. So I just wanted to give people both the option, you know, to see what the actual shoot, the shot of the coin look like. And then they can compare it to the TrueView, you know.
Especially when you have, it's a first auction, especially when you're trying to establish yourself out there, because there's been all kinds of online auctions, some good, some not so good. And the representation of the product is important because, you know, you recently had the opportunity to attend an event, and you know how much the collectors are interested in getting exactly what they're looking for here, because, yes. I mean, you don't just talk the talk, you walk the walk too.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm, you know, for most of my, you know, time in this business, I mean, I've been on the other side. I'm usually the bidder in these auctions, and I still do buy stuff, whether it's for myself or for I'll bid on behalf of a client or whatever, and I participate in other auctions. So being the bidder myself, I, you know, I kind of know what I like to look for when I bid an auction. You know, so I implemented some of the things that I would want to see into this sale. So we'll see how it goes. It's going to be, it's an interesting experiment, and I'm excited to see how this works, you know, and where it goes moving forward. Because we have a whole other idea on what to do if we're going to do some sales going forward and what we want to focus on as opposed to coins. Like with auctions, I feel we do, since we do like rare bars as well, rare ingots, and we've gotten a little bit into the vintage ingot market, I think that's a really good avenue, the bar market for auctions. And it's something, if we're going to do auctions going forward, that I wanted to focus more on doing vintage bars and stuff that's unique as opposed to just type coins. Because I think there's plenty of other auction houses that get the type coin market really, you know, they got that down so well and they have the established clientele for that. And it's a very straightforward process, right? When you're dealing with like US type coins, people kind of know the ranges of price that the coins are going to be at. But with the rare bar market, it's sort of the wild, wild west. I mean, things can be all over the place. And what I found in, you know, trying to negotiate private sales on rare bars is a lot of times the offers are all over the board. So I feel like that's a market where it would be best to really have an auction, you know, because now, okay, the collectors that are really interested in these bars, let them go out there and see really what they're willing to pay for a bar. And I think it's good because you wind up seeing what the market actually is on these things. You know what I mean? And it's going to bring a lot of price transparency to the marketplace for people that want to get into collecting bars and don't know really, what is a Philly Mint bar that's this size and has this serial number or whatever, or this type of pore structure, huh? What is that going to go for? And what is that really worth? What should I pay for this bar? You know, I mean, over time, as things get more transparent like that, like in more of these bars hit the auction block through like an avenue like ours, or if someone else, you know, beats us to the punch, let's say, or does a better job, I think then it's good for collectors ultimately, because it's going to bring a lot of price discovery to the market.
And I think that's an area that needs a lot of education as well, because, absolutely, you know, coin education is out there and it's plentiful, as you mentioned, but those who are interested in bars, I mean, not all bars are the same. It's not just a lump of metal. It's just something that has a quite amount of history to it, and some more historic than others. So I think by you opening up this opportunity, you open up the opportunity for collectors to get more educated.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You know, with bars, a lot of more information on the companies that made these and stuff is now being discovered. So as things get better and there's more provenance and you're able to do the research and it's going to be more comparable to what you see with coins, like the Newman Numismatic Portal has been a blessing for coins, you know, because now you have this one central location where all this information is being digitized and put onto the internet and accessible for people to do the history, to trace the history of their actual coins, especially the nicer coins that have, you know, pedigree, like from famous collections and stuff like that. I mean, it's pretty amazing. You can track these coins going back almost to their, you know, the early 19th century or more, you know, even from before, which is crazy to me. And as that happens more and more with the bars, I think it's going to, you know, spawn a whole new interest of people wanting to get into collecting these things. So I'd love to grow with the market as that market grows, you know.
And when we're talking about education, one of the things that folks need to, and I'm going to, you and I talked about this a little bit beforehand here, is when you visit VegasCoinDealer.com, one of the things I really loved was the fact that on your website, you have what we don't do. I mean, a lot of times you think that every coin dealer offers the same type of services and every auction offers the same type of things. But you guys have taken to the point where, you know, if somebody's into this and you're not, all they have to do is check your website. This is awesome. I love what you did with that.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you know, it saves us some time because the problem is that, you know, the coin world is really small, you know, but the coin industry itself is pretty diverse. I mean, it depends on in what you deal in, you know, and that's the thing. Like when you're in a coin shop, I get it. Like, cause I come from that background of being in the coin shop. What you're buying over the counter, you kind of have to know a little, you have to be a jack of all trades, right? You have to know a little bit about sort of everything in order to make a purchase for yourself. But realistically, you can't know everything, you know? And being that we're not a coin shop, you know, we don't offer general services like anyone else, like in a coin shop would be able to tell you, or it's something that they actively buy. Like we don't really deal in modern coins, but I get a lot of inquiries for modern coins all the time. So it's just, we created that page in order to just make it very easy and streamlined in order to reply to people and say, hey, okay, unfortunately, this is not something we do. And here's why, you know, and it's really because we don't know the market. Like I'm probably not the best guy to come to take your modern coins to. Like, what if you, or your air coin, like what if you do have a really nice air and, you know, me, not knowing about errors, I'm not going to think, you know, I'm not going to want to come out and spend any kind of money on an error coin. I'm probably just going to, you know, give you a really low ball offer and then take a gamble essentially. So I wouldn't be that person for you to really bring your error coin to, you know what I mean?
So You're a collector.
Yeah, I am. But that's the thing. Like I'm a collector that, you know, that can't afford to keep everything. So you become a dealer, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's We're speaking today with Charles Jonath. Charles is the chief numismatist of Vegas Coin Dealer, and he is also the creator of the Coin It podcast. And we invite you to listen to that as well as the Coin World podcast, because we're buddies here. We're not necessarily competition. We're all in this game for the same reason. That's to educate and inform the collector. How did Coin It podcast come about, Charles?
You know, I want to consume at myself more content on coins because it's what I'm interested in, right? And, you know, for me and my specific interest in what I was looking for, I really didn't find. And, you know, I kept trying to get other people to do what I'm doing and they didn't do it. You know, they were procrastinating, people who I think are probably better suited to do the podcast. And I was just waiting around for someone to do it. But eventually I just said, you know what, if I'm not going to find exactly what I'm looking for, then I'm just going to do it myself and take the time. And my whole hope behind this, and then my goal is that someone's going to stumble upon this who's really not into coins and say, oh, this is interesting. Maybe this is something I could get into. Because I feel like I have a lot of passion for our hobby. And I think it's something that more people should know about and understand that, like, this is a viable thing you can collect. But, you know, what I've found from experience is that numismatics can be a really good investment, you know? And I know a lot of people in our hobby try to stay away from, they call it the I word, right? The investment word. And I get it, because there's probably, you know, that's sort of like a road that's perilous to talk about, right? To walk down, let's say, because no one wants to get in trouble with saying that these things are investments and all that, whatever. But from experience, they are investments, you know? And then if you really know what you're doing, I mean, they've performed crazy well for me. So I just want to sort of educate people and say, okay, this is something you could get into. It's an investment, but it's also a hobby. It's something you could get a lot of pleasure out of, you know, and it takes time, right? It takes years. Like even if you, let's say you're exorbitantly wealthy and then you have tons of money and you can afford to pretty much buy what you want, it still would take you a lot of time to build an elite collection if you can even get certain coins, because they're just so, they're not accessible and people that have them don't want to sell them. So it's a hobby that is sort of, there's so many different levels to collecting for different budgets that you can really get into this. And as the hobby grows, also the viability of its investment in different budgets will solidify, you know.
I think we're kind of preaching to the choir in a lot of ways in that, because we all know the experience. I mean, to me, one of the first things I heard when you talked was how you got started at a young age because your family was involved. But I'm sure that even as a child, you were surrounded by people who weren't interested in it. And so you've been on a lifelong journey to kind of get people interested in this hobby.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, nobody was, right? You know, I out of my friends, I'm the only one that was really into coins, you know, and there's tons of people that you meet on a day-to-day basis that really know nothing about coins or collecting coins.
I mean, yeah, but the thing of it is, it's on us to generate the excitement. And that's what we with this podcast and you with the Coin It podcast are able to do, is generate the excitement about it. Because there's a lot of ways, as you said, even if somebody had a lot of money, they may not be able to afford everything here. But I think one of the biggest threats to our hobby is the fact that people get discouraged. They start on the pursuit for a couple of years and then they move on to something else. I mean, any hobby is that way. In the automotive side of things, you have a project car and you get frustrated with, you know, not being able to do the work or not being able to find the part or whatever the case may be. I mean, something as simple as the state quarters, not being able to find everyone that you want right there. But that's absolutely not the point in a lot of ways. The point is simply to enjoy the journey, yeah, in my mind.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's the thing. It's something you can have a lot of fun with, right? And whenever you set a goal and it takes time, you know, people know this. This is why video games are so popular too, because people spend all this time putting into these video games. But, you know, if you built a really great collection, you know, it's something not only that is just as rewarding and time, it takes a lot of effort and time and research and that kind of thing. Like, but it's also something that you can recoup, you know, on your investment. Basically, it's an investment. You can actually make profit from it. So, yep. You know, there's multiple levels there. And if someone's interested in it, it's a great field to be in. So, yep. And I'm happy that you guys are doing this podcast and other people are starting to come on and do podcasts and do more, you know, create more content that is centered around the hobby. I think that's great for us, because we're so small of a community. It doesn't feel that way sometimes if you're going to shows and you're around coin people a lot, but you know, if you put your, but that's really a bubble, right? So, I mean, the more that as our hobby goes, and now with the internet, I think we all need to sort of band together to help each other grow the hobby in general, because it's good for everyone in the business.
Definitely so. Well, we're about to wrap it up here right now, but once again, let's talk a little bit about, because if you're trying to grow the hobby through Vegas Coin Dealer and through the auction coming up at the end of the month, once again, let's give them the date and the details and the website. You're better at giving it than I am.
So. Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. It's going to be on September 30th, the auction, and it's going to be at 5 p.m. Pacific time. You can register to bid if you go to auctions.vegascoindealer.com. Or you could go to vegascoindealer.com and click bid now, and it'll take you to the auctions page. And there's also an online catalog there for the auction. There's 16 lots. They're all choice pieces, really nice coins. So yeah, good luck to the people that are interested, or if you got something there that suits your needs and fits your collection, you know, good luck to you, and I hope you win it.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for your time here today, and best of luck with the auction and also with the dealership and with the Coin It podcast. This is where we bring the editors in when I screw up like that. So no. Anyway, you can appreciate that.
It's funny, Larry. I don't even edit on mine. We just talk. It's just whatever.
Yeah, well, then just you put the pressure on me now. I'm going to leave that in. But Charles, thanks so much for your time. Look forward to meeting you face-to-face someday.
Absolutely. Likewise. I hope to see you at one of these shows or whatever coming sometime soon. And then, you know, I'm always there. Feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, that's it. We hope you've enjoyed Charles Jonath here. I mean, I had a great time talking to him about various subjects, and I'm sure we'll be talking to him more on his Coin It podcast, as he is a subscriber to the Coin World podcast as well. You should be too. So once again, we do appreciate Charles coming on board here. We appreciate you listening to this one. Thanks so much for your insights, Jeff. Appreciate that on the royalty side of things. We got to go and get ready for our next one coming up right here, as you've got to get packed for your trip to London. So in the meantime,
happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about Coin World Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.